Well, this afternoon, it's my great privilege, real joy, to be able to meet together with Dave Patti. We're talking about authority and, in particular, delegating authority. We're talking about the question, the whole question of authority in our network this year. And Dave is the founder and president of Josiah Venture, who have staff in 16 European countries, training leaders for the next generation. And so, Dave, just it's a real joy to be able to sit down with
Thank you this afternoon.
We've spoken before, and yes, I always learn so much from our conversations. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into the whole question of delegation. Leaders often struggle with letting go, don't they? Why do you think delegation is so important, and why does it feel so risky?
Oftentimes, people, when they think about delegation, they think about the fact that they've got too much to do and somebody else needs to do it. And they approach it more on a task basis. Yeah. But because of that, if I just delegate tasks, I don't really empower people. And that's why I love the fact that we frame this as delegating authority, because to delegate correctly, there really has to be authority given. But that's hard for leaders, because most Christian leaders have this sense of responsibility. They want things to be done well. They work for a long time to develop their skills, and the people they're delegating to probably aren't as skilled and gifted as they are. Yeah. And so there's this sense of, I don't want it to go wrong. I don't want something to fall apart. And it may be even faster to do it yourself than to delegate to someone else. And so I think some of that sense of responsibility, maybe the tyranny of the urgent, maybe a sense even of, I don't want to fail God, causes people, when they get authority, to think, I've been given it to hold for myself, and not necessarily that I've been given it to pass on.
Have you ever felt that you were the only one who could handle everyone?
No, but I don't know that I was the only one that could handle everyone, but maybe that the person next to me wouldn't do it as well as I would.
So how did you overcome that when you found yourself in that place?
Well, I think of Jethro coming to Moses, and it's his conversation with him is really interesting, because first of all, he says he rejoiced in the good things that were happening. And so sometimes we think, wow, there's so many good things that are happening, I've got to just continue to hold it. And he rejoiced in the good things that were happening. And then he went and he said, but what's going on is not good. And he said two things. He said, you'll wear yourself out, and the people are going to walk away unsatisfied. And those were the two reasons he gave. And I start to experience that I start wearing myself out, and I realize that actually I'm not meeting the needs of people. And rather than just doing more, we often try to just press down on the gas pedal, but we have to make a shift and go, how does God want me to take that authority that has been given and entrust it to other people? So he told Jethro, he said, choose different people among you that are proven. And then he redivided the work in a different kind of a way. And then they were entrusted. And then he said something interesting. He said, the hard problems will still come to you, which is interesting. And sometimes people try to they delegate just by, throwing it away, or they hold it too tight. And there is a sense that we learn from that story that we delegate, but we also have to be ready for the hard stuff still to come to us.
So you talk about the example of Jethro and training and teaching Moses. What are some of the ways we see Jesus delegating authority? He's the one who has all authority.
It's so crazy, because Jesus could do it so much better than everyone else. And I think of a number of times, but one of them I think is the feeding of the 5,000, because the disciples come to Jesus and they say, hey Jesus, you've got to send them away. And he says, no, you feed them. And they look at the resources and say, we don't have enough. And then he says, how much do you have? And what's interesting is what you realize is that it's not, part of it is about meeting the needs of the people, but part of it is about developing his followers.
Yeah.
And so one of the keys for me was understanding that actually delegation of authority is part of disciple making, that it's an integral part, that people won't learn without some weight on them. And now Jesus did the miracle in the end. He knew what he was going to do, but he still put that weight on them, and actually he could have solved it faster himself. It would have been simpler, and they still needed his help for some of it, but he's not just watching how do we get things people fed, he's going, how do I develop my disciples? So I love watching Jesus purposefully give authority as he's developing his disciples. And then, of course, when he calls his, chose the 12 disciples, and it says he called them to be with him, and he gave them authority to cast out demons and heal diseases. It's interesting that he actually gave them authority before he gave them instructions. So he actually said, I'm gonna give you, which, you know, you wonder, are we giving people instructions before we give them authority? Or are we actually entrusting them and letting them know, hey, the weight's coming on you in a good way. Like, I trust you. I believe in you. Put this on you. And now, after the weight is on, I'll tell you how to do it. So sometimes we say, I'm going to get people all the way ready, and then I'll put the weight on them. But actually, you can't get ready without weight of responsibility and authority on you.
Wonderful. Thank you. And he also said, you know, that the harvest is plentiful and the workers are few.
Right.
Pray for the Lord of the harvest.
Yeah, yeah.
But identifying those people, you spoke earlier about identifying people in your team.
Yeah.
What are some of the practical tips for identifying people in your team with leadership potential?
Well, let me mention back to the other spot you said, because there's two spots that come. One is the feeding 5,000. The other is the sending of the 72. And so sometimes we see him seems to be motivated by he just is training them. But other times it's just the task is so big. Yeah. And so he says, pray. But then he goes on from praying to actually act, and he chose 72 and sends them out. So tell me, ask your first question again, because I went back to the other one. Your question was,
what are the practical tips then? So you need to choose your people with potential. How do you do that?
I think actually the sending of the 72 is a great example, because I think we start with the vision. And so we don't start just with the task. So leaders often go, I'm overworked. What are the things I don't want to do? I'll give them to other people. And then they delegate in that kind of way. They go, wow, we need someone to greet at the front of church. Would you do that? Or I'm preparing my own PowerPoints. I need someone to do it for me so I have more time. But we don't paint the big picture of what's trying to accomplish. So Jesus began by saying, hey, here's the vision. The harvest is plentiful. The workers are few. And then into that vision, he talked about roles that would be needed. Pray that God sends workers out into his harvest. So there's roles within vision. And then he goes to people and then tasks. So it's really interesting that he goes vision, roles, people, task. He works down like that instead of task. Where do I find some people to do the job? So I think that's one of the keys. If I was going to delegate to someone to be a greeter in the church, I'd first say, this is what we want our church to be. This is how we want people to feel in our church. And because of that, we'll need some people to be in the foyer to greet them. I've noticed that you're really good at relating to people. See, now we get to the person. And would you be interested in standing in that kind of a role and maybe taking responsibility for our team that's doing it? And then they go, well, what does that involve? Now we get down to the tasks. And so instead of starting with the tasks and saying, hey, we need somebody to shake people's hands, you start with the big picture and move down to the small. And someone said, until the why question is answered, the price is always too high. And we've got to begin with the why, because you can do a lot of things that involve sacrifice and hard work if you know why. Yeah. If it's just there's work to be done and I don't want to do it and I'm giving it to you, that's not going to be very motivating for people.
What you're describing there is a way of delegating that really motivates and inspires people,
right?
Not just sort of burdens them. Is there anything else you'd add in terms of ways of going about the delegation of things that increases motivation and inspiration?
Yeah, I think that whole sense of what I'm really trying to do is develop people.
Yeah.
People really feel that. If they feel that I'm giving this to you because I want you to grow, and this is going to be a great opportunity to do that, then they sense I'm interested in them maybe more than the task.
Yeah.
And that's really motivating for people. I remember as a child, my dad wanted to teach us how to work, And so we gardened a lot of empty lots around near our house. And so I'd spent a lot of time working in the summers, raising and selling vegetables. And I remember one time at our back porch where we sold lots and lots of vegetables, someone said to my dad, he said, is it worthwhile? Do you make enough money raising vegetables? And he said, no. He said, but I'm not raising vegetables, I'm raising kids. And actually I felt that as we were raising vegetables, that we were raising vegetables, but really he was raising kids. And I think that when we have that view, it changes the way we relate to people as we delegate, and they sense that they're not a means to get our work done, but the work that's to be done is a means to develop and invest in them. We're raising God's kids. And now the thing is that because of the work that we had to do, actually the work was the context in which we grew. So you could say, oh, you just care about raising your kids. Why are you spending so much time raising a garden? Well, raising a garden is how you raise kids.
Yeah.
Feeding the 5,000 is how you train your disciples. So, but when people sense that the work is a bigger context for the development of God's kids, it really changes their motivation. They sense that we're in that for them. And when you think about it, that's what God does. Think God could do all his work by himself.
Yeah.
He could do it a lot better if he delegates it to his kids. And then in the context of serving with our Father, we're serving his garden and we're raising his vegetables, but he's really raising his kids. And I think that kind of perspective really makes a difference when you delegate.
I love that so much. That's going to sit with me. Thank you. Earlier on in the conversation, we talked a little bit about delegation not just being about tasks, but the delegation of authority. How can leaders strike a balance between empowerment and accountability? So there's two facets of this whole question.
Well, part of delegating authority is actually making someone responsible for outcomes and not just activities. So if I was delegating someone to greet at the church, I'd say, these are the outcomes that we want. And that's what the responsibility I'd like to give to you. And then authority to accomplish that. Now, one of the interesting things when Jesus delegated authority, he did it publicly. And so he named them. And then publicly, it was part of his the Sermon on the Mount was when he delegated that to his. So he, a lot of people think the Sermon on the Mount is actually a commissioning sermon right after he delegated to his disciples. So everyone knew. So I think part of it is actually letting them know and letting everyone else know. And then when you're giving them feedback, coming back to those outcomes and saying, I'm holding you accountable for the outcomes. Now, the disciples did that. They went out and preached 2x2, and then they came back and reported. Or they went out and cast demons, and he came down from the Mount of Transfiguration. They weren't being successful. And he steps in, and he actually takes it back for a little bit, which is really interesting. He's holding them accountable for outcomes. I had a business leader tell me, he said, you deliberate, delegate, demand performance. And then he actually said to make a second decision. So what do you mean by that? And he said, well, if you aren't getting the outcomes, you got to step back in and do something about it. So some people delegate and they go, oh, now I gave them authority, I can't speak into it.
Yeah.
But we have to realize that it's delegate authority, and that holding people accountable is actually, again, part of their growth. How will people grow if there's no accountability?
And if we've delegated authority, we remain accountable ourselves.
That's
as the leader who delegated.
Yeah. So you have to say, I'm still accountable to God for that which I've entrusted you. Jesus was still accountable to the Father for what had been entrusted to him. And so he held them accountability too. But I think we have to see accountability is a gift. Accountability is a service that we give to people. Mm. It's not it's not the inspector coming.
Yes.
The policeman coming, but it's part of helping them grow.
You talk about the distorting paradox of delegation. Tell me a bit more about what you mean by that.
Well, this is one of the reasons why most people don't delegate. And if they delegate, they don't stay in it long enough. When you delegate, you actually, you have to give time to gain time. So in the short run, it's slower to delegate than it is to do it yourself. So that it now in the long run, it creates acceleration, but in the short run, it costs more. So it takes time to get time. It takes energy to get energy. So leaders don't have much energy and they have to invest a lot of energy in getting someone ready and they don't make time for it. You actually have to, lose before you gain. And it's that time of loss that people aren't willing to go through. And so they'll head into it part way and then they'll go, well, it's easier to do myself, or they'll take a shortcut, or they won't adequately prepare that other person. So the paradox of delegation is that you have to go slow before you go fast. You have to lose before you gain. You have to spend time before you gain time. And you have to be willing for that process. And that's why a lot of people, in the end, you will have more energy, more time, more impact. In the short run, you'll have less.
But that disciple-making agenda or, you know, motive makes so much more sense of living with that paradox, doesn't
that's
it?
That's right. So you have to have the long view. If you have the short view, you'll never delegate, and the long view is only what gives you that motivation.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm a great fan of sort of situational leadership, adapting leadership for different people and contexts and so on. So not one size fits all approach. How can leaders adapt their delegation style to meet the different needs and styles of the team members that they are delegating to?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of work being done in the business world on situational leadership. And the question was asked, what style of leadership is the best? You know, some people are very directive, some people are very hands-off, and usually leaders are more comfortable with one of those approaches. Be very involved, very detailed in their approach, be very hands-off. Some leaders just like being supportive. Some leaders say, if you're good, I'm giving it to you and I'm leaving. And they said, which of those is the best? And the answer was, it all depends. And so whatever style is closest to a leader, he really needs to learn four different kinds of styles and be ready to use them in different contexts. One of them is a very directive style. Another is a coaching style where you're not just giving instructions, but you're giving feedback, you're watching them. The third would be a very supportive kind of style. And then the last would be where you just give that person space and say, I believe in you. And it's not about checking in every week to I'm cheering you on. It's about just creating that space. And you really need to learn how to do all of those. And it depends a lot on the experience and the confidence of the person in that role. So if you have someone who has a lot of skill and experience and a lot of confidence, then it's best to give them an area, tell them they're in charge, and then give them space. If you have someone who is just beginning, well, they're going to need both support and a lot of information. If they're farther along, they may need less information, but they still need that support. So one of the keys, and there's some great books on situational leadership, but is developing all four of those skills, and then knowing that is this person skilled? Do they know what to do? And are they confident in this role? And if they're not either, then I'm going to have to be much more involved.
One of the wonderful things I think we have as Christian leaders is a profound understanding of the dignity and worth of everyone we're working with. And I think one of the things that I've found so helpful has been that sort of bearing in mind, how do I protect the dignity of this staff member, which will be different things for different people, and that's a wonderful guide. So a final question: just thinking about your own formative years as a young worker and a leader, was there an example of you being delegated to that had a particular impact on you?
There certainly was. When I was 22 and just had finished Bible college, the mission organization my dad was founded, began to think about beginning youth ministry on military bases. And they had several people actually apply to come on staff to do that. And the director of the mission said, Dave, would you launch an entire new division of our ministry and be responsible for these seven staff that are coming on? And they were all going to be full-time youth workers, and I'd never been a full-time youth worker. I was directly out of college. I'd never led something like that before. And I remember going to my dad and saying, oh, I'm not ready for this. I need a lot more years of experience. And he said, he told me a story. He said, I'm going to tell you a story about the older and younger banker. He said this younger banker was coming in, and he got a new role. And so he interviewed an older banker and said, what's the key to good leadership? And the older banker had the cigar in his hand. He put it down. And he says, good decisions. And then he put it back in. The man wrote it down. He says, what's the key to good decisions? And took his cigar out, sat it down. He says, experience. And then he wrote it down. He says, how do you get experience? And took his cigar out again. He says, bad decisions. And I remember my dad saying, the only way you'll learn to lead is by leading.
Yeah.
The only way you'll gain experience is by doing things wrong. He said, if you want to be a powerful leader down the road, now's the time to get started. The earlier you can get started, the better. And he said, I believe in you, and I'll support you, and I'll stand behind you. And he was actually my boss while I did that. So I actually worked under my dad, and he was so good at both giving me feedback and giving me space and giving me authority.
Yeah.
and confidence. And I remember one time I was 23 years old, 24 years old, and the work was starting to grow, so it was probably 2 years into it. And he said, the chief of chaplains needs to know about your work. And I said, who's he? And he said, well, he's a general who works in the Pentagon. He's in charge of all the chaplains for the entire world, for the US military. I'm going to take you there. And he took me, and we went into the Pentagon and went into the office of this one-star general. And my dad, who knew him, said, I just brought my son in. He's developing a youth ministry on military base. He's doing a really good job. I want him to tell you some about it. And my dad just stepped to the side and set me in there. And that was just an incredible example of delegating authority and leaving it in my hands and having confidence that I could do it and then opening the way. Yeah. And that deeply marked me. And I've made a lot of bad decisions and have a lot of experience. And hopefully I'm making some good ones today.
Without the cigar. Dave, wonderful to talk as always. Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you.